And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with George's Food Truck, Kilauea Paint, and Soltran Construction. Mahalo to our supporters.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Chef George of the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef Georgia de Jungle supports KKCR.
Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, specializing in professional-grade Pittsburgh paints and paint sundries, premium pet food, and organic livestock feed. Propane exchange and filling, too. Located just past the Shell station on Kolo Road in Kilauea. Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5:30, and Saturday from 8 to 1. Locally owned, Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, 828-6655.
Lewis and Eddie Soltran Construction, 639-4836, building quality on Kauai for over 25 years. New custom homes, remodeling, and repairs. Exclusive dealer for Talia's Hurricane Roll-Down Shutters Protection for your home. Lewis and Eddie Soltran Construction, 639-4836 or SoltranConstruction.com.
And mahalo for listening and supporting Kauai Community Radio. So this is Felicia. We've got a really packed show today, lots of things. Mason Chalk is on the line with me. Mason, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank you so much.
How
for...
you doing?
Good, good. Now, you were going to come in today, but you had a schedule change, and so maybe you'll be in the later part of the show. But tell us what you're
Tell us what you're doing. I just pulled up here to the self-help groundbreaking in Kapahi here. There's about 8 to 10 homes that are slated to be built, and so they're doing groundbreaking, celebrating their 50 years in operation. So stopping by here, hopefully this doesn't take me too long. I can swing by and spend some time with you in person.
Okay, and just so I know, in Kapahi, where in Kapahi is the self-help housing going?
This is happening on Moa Road. It's right off of Ho'ala, past Lipo Road.
Oh, okay. So it's that's great. How many units are going to be able to be in there?
You know, I read 10, you know, on our council side, in our certificate, but, you know, it may be only 8 now that I'm looking at the mayor's proclamation.
Well, housing is really important. That's, you know, one of the many issues that we've been dealing with on the island, and I want to give you credit, Mason, Councilmember Mason Chalk, for being willing to put things on the agenda that have been floating around, actually, for years that people want to talk about. I'm just going to name a few of them, and you might be able to bring up some others. I know tomorrow, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the county manager versus mayor, is that going to be on the agenda again tomorrow?
No, actually, we had a communication that I put on the agenda last week. We talked about if this council is willing to expend some energy and time to just consider the question, is the county manager system something we want to consider? So we're going to be putting together a resolution that supports the formation of a subcommittee to ask that specific question. There's an international county managers association that I've been in contact with. And this is no news, old news. It's pretty much old news, you know, on Kauai. We've actually started the conversation, but we've never gotten as far as we needed to in order for it to see the pros and cons of the mayoral system and the county manager system. And, you know, I just had an interest because I think we always need to question ourselves how we can do better. And this system seems to work very well in certain situations. I don't think it excludes the need for good leadership, because it's good people who can run any system. But I think that a good structure can also provide us, you know, more leverage, more ability to do a better job. And the county manager system, one of the aspects of it is that it just allows some of the politics to get out of the way and offers accountability to, you know, a manager who or which we enlist to get the vision of Kauai completed.
I think I would like to do, a large part of a show or two on that, because it's a very big discussion, and mm-hmm. in many ways it overlaps some of the things that I think are relevant today. It, you know, a big concern could be is that this person who's got this pull from St. Louis or Fairbanks or wherever, mm-hmm. we would have to really be careful that we don't necessarily, or a concern I have.
Absolutely.
Is that maybe it would be somebody?
Go ahead. No, sorry. I'm concerned about that too. We could set the parameters of this position. Of course, I think others have expressed the same concerns. You know, we want to be able to provide opportunity for all those who want to serve. And so are we willing to if anyone's interested and has the support for it, get them to the kind of qualifications that we want them to have. And right now I think the baseline qualifications across the nation are public administration, a master's in public administration. Anyways, those are questions I think, Felicia, you know, you bring up that are really key to what the subcommittee is going to be looking into. The timeline for us, at least as far as we're drafting the resolution, is that we spend at least 6 months investigating, researching, figuring out what kind of foundation we could provide. What are the options, and then bring it back for discussion.
And what I see as valuable about it is whether or not Kauai would choose to go towards this county manager format is it might give us ideas of how to strengthen the existing charter, which was written, I think, in the 60s, strengthen the existing charter to be more appropriate for, you know, what is today and what the weaknesses that have revealed themselves. So
I agree.
I think that there's a lot of value in the discussion. Other things that where I feel like this is running into is something we have this impact, I would say, of the dominant culture of the continental United States somewhat stepping down pretty hard on Kauai,
mm-hmm.
or on Hawaii, I really should say. When I'm looking at, there's so many big issues out. One thing that we will go into a little bit today is about Mauna Kea, the protectors up there at Mauna Kea. That 30-meter telescope is supposedly going to start again tomorrow. And I've been looking and trying to really research a bit what the plan is. Mm-hmm. And I see postings and articles from San Diego or other places. And maybe you know, you don't know what the thing that masking. I've seen, like, David Ige is on the Internet as saying that they will bring the National Guard up there. Do you know if that's correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not sure if that's correct, if the governor's going to go that far. I think it would be a sad situation to kind of stir up the movement in a negative way. And I think that there's been a lot of respect in this process so far. But you know, it's getting to a head here in terms of them moving forward. So things are going to get stepped up to another level. I think you bring up a really good point. It's, you know, the county manager system, whether or not it goes forward, what's valuable is the discussion about how we can be better, right? And so what you're talking about is really how do we, if we don't have these discussions, how can we even consider coming together and solving some of these issues collectively? Because really, we've drawn the line, so many of us. It's always been there, but they're getting so much smaller, and hard. It's hard for us not to cross over those lines anymore as we're seeing huge amounts of growth happen around the world. And so we've got to answer these questions about what's most important and how we're going to address it. So, I mean, Mauna Awakea, you know, it's like, I think Native Hawaiians have drawn the line in the sand, and they said, look, yes, there's been so much taken over the years. This is where we're drawing the line. And while I'm not opposed to telescopes, I support this Native Hawaiian movement because I think it's just saying enough is enough. And you will not take our, you know, our temple. You're not going to take our historical precious.
And having studied a bit, what I see, you know, because like a telescope itself, it's kind of a drag that is the symbol of what is being resisted. But I think the main issue is the state is breaking its own laws. It's set up for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, really stretching the boundaries of what is public output or public getting outreach and public input. There's a lot of things where they really haven't followed their own rules. And so if it was somebody else trying to get away with what they're getting away with, you know, you wouldn't even be thinking about armed forces coming in to protect them. It would be armed forces to stop them.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, what you're bringing up is just an environment of mistrust that has seeded our communities, our, you know, our islands, our state, our nationally and even globally. So, I mean, I know you're talking about the sanctuary today, I mean, you know, which is has been a big contentious issue as well on Kauai specifically.
And but I want to thank you for coming in with me to speak with Ann Walton and Jean Sousa. Ann will be in here in about a half hour, and thank you for coming and being a part of listening to that.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's I always feel that the, you know, best, most productive conversations happen when in small groups. And but you have to have so many of them that it's difficult for these large movements to occur. But I think Kauai has spoken very clearly about where they stand on this. You know, the flip side of that is that I think it saddens me a little bit that there may be, you know, more that we could do in looking deeper into it. But like I said before, it's really a trust issue. You know, the majority of people will not even read through the whole document because they already know how they feel about the federal government and their takings. And so I think that those are the social issues that are coming to a head on our island in general. And we've really got to be able to create some space to come together and you know, over time. So I think it's okay that we have conflict. I think it's okay that we have difficult conversations. And we need to stay engaged and open the door, keep the door open long enough for us to have some forward progress.
Well, yeah, we have to sit there and really work together. When they come in, I'm going to ask them some very key questions, and I appreciate their willingness to come in and talk about it. And, you know, there's this larger looming Trans-Pacific Partnership that today on the Senate, you know, it narrowly voted in favor of it. So tomorrow they're having... you know, they only need to have 51 votes to have it pass, and the Senate today did this procedural vote of 60 to 37. And so this is to fast-track this authority, and that's just mind-boggling that we would take a trade deal that is so large and so pervasive and not allow even our elected Congress people to make shifts and adjustments in it. This fast track says it's an up or down vote once it comes in.
Yeah.
So that's really large, and to me it is a piece of what we're looking at here with even, you know, the Marine Sanctuary. It, and really what's happening with the 30-millimeter telescope is sort of like this. It's international companies coming in with very little benefit to Hawaii other than the prestige of being there and saying, we're going to put this at the top of your watershed, and without any ifs, ands, or buts, you know, we're going to do it. And it's kind of it's hard to find words for me to say how disappointing that is, that that's the way that our government works.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And we've got a huge, huge hill to climb in terms of community engagement. But it's going to take everyone, I think, you know, in this process to get to where we can get. So I'm just, like I said earlier, hopeful and want to make sure that we continue to have these discussions. And, you know, people like you and others who can have show how to model having these discussions so that we can really get concrete, you know, evidence, research, and information out, you know, to everyone so that we can make better decisions.
Thank you. And I want to appreciate that you brought up a couple other issues that people want to talk about without necessarily making a decision, like the cost of rescues for, mm-hmm. for people on the Nepali. And there's been the stuff with homestays. You had involvement on that one, too. Do you want to speak to either one of them?
Sure. Well, the one with the rescues is coming up again in committee. And we'll have public hearing on it soon. The response has been fairly well, fairly good from the community. You know, I think that we pay taxes and we want to make sure that they're spent properly, especially in this time of a budget crisis. So, you know, I think that we need to figure out how we're going to draw the line in the sand again with this. You know, at what point does it become, negligent? You know, who makes that determination and what does it look like? We don't have any rules or regulations to guide us in that direction. So what I'm proposing here, and again, let me just give you a little background on it. We started this another committee about a year and a half ago after the 121 were rescued from Hanakapiai. And we've been looking at ways that we can address, you know, the growing numbers that are on our Nepali coast. The studies that have come back show that, you know, on a very quiet day, we've got at least 5,000 people. On a big, very busy day, we've got almost 20,000 people on that. I'm sorry, 500 to 2,000 minus the zero. So anywhere from 500 people to 2,000 people a day on the trail. So
yes,
it's gotten a lot busier, you know, in the last few years, and that's why we're seeing the need for us to look at how we're going to manage this. It's not county property. So the first place we went was to the state and had some meetings with our Senate representative and House representative and said, hey, is there anything we can do? And we've created some MOUs with DLNR. You know, we're looking at how we can get reimbursed for some of this. We did some of that work, so it's on its way. And the last piece of this, we thought, you know, we should look at the cost of these rescues and what we can do to curb them. And this was one of the things we thought, when we looked at the ordinance, there's something already in it that says, we have the right to recoup, costs for these rescues if found negligent. So what I'm proposing is that we come into alignment with, the state ordinance, the HRS, and their verbiage is not gross negligence, but intentional disregard for safety. And that's something that I think that, you know what, I'm getting called to go up to the self-help housing.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling in.
No, I'm sorry the timing didn't work out, but anyways, we're going to be hearing that. You know, I'm looking forward to that discussion. I think there's a lot of work to be done, Felicia, on that. The FAA has stated that there's a difference between public and private housing, rescues. So we have to figure out if we're going to move in that direction of charging, what the implications are.
Okay. So. And just before you get off the phone, just so you hear it too, Jonathan Jay, one of the public affairs team here, he heard the question and he said that he had called Governor Ige's office and that the statement was that the spokesperson strenuously denied requesting involvement of the National Guard, and they were not sure exactly how that had come up, but, you know, they're saying that no National Guard. So thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Mason, and maybe we'll see you in later today.
Yeah, aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you for all you do. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Thank you for holding. This is Felicia. You're on the air.
Well, aloha, Felicia. How are you?
Good. Can you turn your radio off? We got an echo.
Oh, yeah. I'm in a spot where I'm near the wind. Is on my better now?
A little bit better, yes.
A little bit better now. Well, thank you so much. I was making a comment in regards to the show before.
Okay.
And this was in regards to disc golf, a game that's being introduced on the island. And I'm Santa Phil. I'm the guy who rides around in the
Jeep.
So I just wanted to make a little comment, and I know it's kind of in your show, but they said, well, maybe the public would like to know about
it. Okay, so what do you want to tell us?
Well, real quick is that at Pu'akea Golf Course, I'm doing school. There is a school academy for golf for children.
Oh,
Mm-hmm. What I did is I volunteered to do Thursdays to teach the kids how to play the sport disc golf. And you had just had a guest on before talking about a Lindgate Park project and to introduce frisbee golf, or what they really call disc golf. And I'm involved with that on the south side as well. And I'm kind of donating some time on Thursdays. And I put some baskets out, and the kids get to play with the discs and learn how to play disc golf. And if anybody would like to come out, we're good from 10 to 2 on Thursdays. You can come out and throw disc and kind of see how it is. And it's a very low-impact sport. It's very easy to play. Anybody can do it. And I've been involved with it for about 30 years. And I just wanted to kind of give a comment that way. And I do have a website, kawaiidiscgolf.com. And if anybody would like to call me in regards to any information that way.
So that's D-I-S-C.
Yeah, it'll be kawaiidiscgolf.com. K-A-U-A-I. Disc, D-I-S-C, golf, G-O-L-F.com.
Okay, and the number?
And my phone number is 619-417-0050. I have a different phone number because I'm really from the North Pole every now and then. So it's easy to get a hold of me. I'm on the island. And there is some tournaments coming up that I'm having. And if anybody's interested, they're more than happy to call that number, 619-417-0050. And Felicia, I do want to thank you for letting me have this time to just say hello, and mahalo for all you do for the island, and thank you for letting me jump in your show.
Well, Santa Phil, thank you for all that you do for the island. And for people who might not know, Puakea course is in Lihue, right? Kind of near Home Depot and
Costco. Is right there. And what it is it's just a nice kids class that they have from 9 to 12 every day, Monday through Friday. And then I show up on Thursdays and give them about an hour of time of learning how to do a whole nother golf type of program, and it's called disc golf.
Okay, well, thank you so much for helping.
All right.
Everyone.
Well, have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much, Felicia. Aloha.
Aloha. All right, so my son Ian is in here helping with the phones, and so I appreciate that. And if people do want to call in, it's 826-7771. And, so we have this big clash of cultural perspectives, and I don't even mean class of cultures. It's just a different mindset, and sometimes it feels like there's a really large reality divide. Sometimes people are paying attention to things, and other people are completely oblivious, and that goes from the mountain to the sea. So on the sea end today, we will be talking about the marine sanctuary, and everywhere from the backyard to Washington, D.C. I have a caller. Thank you. You're on the air. Aloha.
Hi.
Aloha.
Hello, Felicia. I was listening to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how it's been explained to us and stuff, but where did the president get the right to obligate us all to the decisions that he's making with other countries, that we can be sued for his decisions?
Are you asking for a serious answer on that one?
I just wanted to know if anybody ever inquired into it or how he got the rights to obligate us to do this.
Well, I mean, you could get a very long answer on that. There has been a systematic softening of what was our original constitution to where in many ways it hardly exists anymore. We pretty much operate under commerce law, and that really became huge around the time of the Civil War. And the 14th Amendment, which ostensibly gave freedom to the slaves, it also really empowered the corporations. And we have had this steady digression away from really what seems like constitutional law. And very much we are seeing an erosion of our Bill of Rights. And we have had in the last few presidential administrations more and more signing statements. You probably know this, but I'm just doing my very best to answer that question as you're asking it.
I'm interested. I just don't understand how he has the rights to obligate us to any kind of deals that he'll make in
it's kind of mind-blowing, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of mind-blowing, and what it demonstrates is how powerless are our Congress at this point.
Yeah.
And what we have as we go from the left to the right to the left, or seemingly from the left to the right to the left, as we have presidents, there is this steady erosion of people empowerment. And in fact, the council tomorrow will be talking about if we put a resolution in to the United States saying the county wants to see Citizens United repealed. And that is the Supreme Court decision that said corporations are citizens and money is the right to free speech. And Matt Bernabe made a pretty good joke saying it's not free if it costs money, right?
So, well, Alec has offered $800 million to put in the next Republican president on this election.
That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. Is that what you mean by Alec? Yes, that is a think tank special interest group that co-authors very much municipal and state legislations across the country. So there is this erosion that comes up. Those do things like create these partnerships like the Correctional Corporation of America or the testings for the standards. I picked those two things because in Hawaii we are in partnership on those with the testing and with the prisons. And it influences our culture so deeply, and that's never put before the voters. It's never even brought up in discussion.
So it seems like we're descending into fascism here. People have no choice anymore to what's going on. It's the corporations and the government.
It seems, yes. It seems like an illusion that we still have the other elements of it. You know, there's little tiny pieces, and everybody's clawing onto them, trying to really make a stand. And it's almost like we have descended into fascism. And for people who don't know what fascism is, that word was coined in World War II by Mussolini, the leader of Italy. And it is corporate control of the government, like government for the corporations. Yeah. And that is seemingly what we have. And we certainly see that pretty well demonstrated in Hawaii.
I see. Well, I won't hold you too long. I'm sure you've got other callers. But just one more quick question is about the marine whale sanctuary. I've heard that there's a clause in that. I mean, I guess it's 700 pages, so I
have... It's 450, and I have it in front of me.
Oh, okay. Well, the clause about the, what do they call it? The repeal from the moratorium of underwater exploration or mining, mineral exploration under the water, that will be, it'll be legal once they make the sanctuary a sanctuary. Because the moratorium had been lifted, is the way that I understand it.
It is the prohibition on that, and I'm looking, and that's on page, 52 for people who have looked at it. And we are going to go into that in depth when Ann is here. And it's better than I had thought. It's that wasn't the intention when they put it together. And I will let her explain that.
My question will be answered later in the show. I'll keep listening.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Goodbye. And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Ian, you have something to say?
A caller called in and was talking about that last subject about...
the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Yes. And he said it was the Act of 1871 that it was the it's the same legislative... that created the District of Columbia, and it basically set the Constitution aside, or it suspended the Constitution, and it's been passed by Congress every 2 years since.
So, caller who called in, call me later, 652-4363, because I would like to look at that detail with you. I know it was kind of right in that window of time, and I was not aware that it gets passed every 2 years, but I wouldn't doubt it. Like, we have these things that they, like the Patriot Act, just keep letting it go,
and
instead of sending.
That's why it's not so important. That's why it's not so focused on, because it's been passed for so long now.
Right, but it was a very big deal, and that is the United States of America in all caps, and that's a corporation where prior to that we had a country, and this corporation is within the country, and the reason it is in Washington, District of Columbia, which is not a state, just like the way the Vatican is or the City of London. Those are separate non-countried cities. The City of London is actually very small within the larger London area. And I don't have huge details on that, but that isn't exactly the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but that is when the Constitution stopped being so powerful and strong. It changed, and there's been a whole series of things like the birth certificate and the Social Security number, and it goes on and on and on, where our system of governance has basically been replaced to a commercial system of government. So everything from the county to the state to the federal government are actually corporations. And so they have a different set of rules. And we don't really focus on that. We don't learn civics anymore. But even when we did learn civics when I was in school, I didn't learn that. If there's a constitutional lawyer or anybody like that who would like to come into the studio and help with that, I would love to actually do a show on that where it's in layman's terms and we all understand it, but it takes more and more of us learning. And in the present, we've been very lucky because there's the internet. So we're all looking and watching different things. And sometimes we get it right, sometimes we don't get it right. So we have to be very studious as we study these different topics. Ian, you take government in school. How was your government class?
Too long ago to remember.
That was last semester.
No, it was
you had Hawaiian
history.
Okay.
But my government class was over a year ago.
Okay. Well, we need to be teaching government in a way where people are really aware of what that means. And we have, speaking of which, many people are speaking out in their own way. Today I noticed that there were staff and friends of the Kauai Humane Society with signs out in the road for that. And then I believe that tomorrow morning there will be people standing in solidarity with the Mauna Kea folks. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. This is Adam calling.
Hi, Adam.
Hey, I want to just say thank you. I appreciate your show and everything you do and the topics you bring up and how you handle them. I just want to share with you and your listeners kind of just a little bit from my perspective. As you know, I work for the federal government and state governments for a long time, and I've been on both sides of these kind of issues that are brought forward and soliciting public input. And I always remind myself, and why I feel frustrated now being on the other end, that the way these things work is that they are procedural rather than substantive. And what I mean
when
by
you're
that,
saying these things, are you speaking of the Marine Sanctuary, or are you speaking of the Constitution, or
any type of new rules or activities that the government proposes, right? So they are procedural in the sense that they are there's a few requirements that require them to go out and solicit public input, but there's nothing substantive that requires them to do anything with that input, and that. Most people don't understand that, and that's why we get so frustrated, because it was never set up to actually take into consideration and act upon the input. It is procedural only. So as long as they follow the procedures, they can do whatever they had proposed to do in the beginning. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And I have Ann Walton in here, and Nina, you have to say your name the right way. Put your mics right up next to your mouths.
Monasevich.
So Anne is from NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and Nina, you were on the Community Advisory Board, is that correct?
The Sanctuary Advisory Council.
The Sanctuary Advisory Council, thank you. So Adam is pretty sharp on these things. So are you two understanding what he's saying? So
thank you, Adam. We came in on the conversation.
But. Yeah. So he's saying it's procedural rather than substantive in terms of getting the public input, meaning you have to do it, but it doesn't have to be listened to.
Well, I can't speak for other federal agencies or other rulemaking processes. I can only speak for NOAA, the National Marine Sanctuary Program. And the way that we do it, I understand what you're saying. There's checking the box under NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. But then there's always also the other side of that, and that is an effort in earnest to hear from the public. And, you know, just as an example, as everybody knows on this island, we're going through a management plan review process for the Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. We are required by law to only have one public hearing. We, in actuality, ended up having 12 public hearings, two of which we added after we put the notice in the Federal Register because the public asked us to add additional meetings. In regards to your comment about the response, I can tell you I had a meeting this morning, and we are braced to spend the next 30 days sorting comments and then putting together categorical responses to all comments that we receive that are substantive in nature that require a response in terms of how we're going to act in regards to what the comments are. So I can't speak for others. I have been with the sanctuary program for a long time, and I know this is standard operating procedure for us, is to take those quite seriously. And I think you'll see what's reflected in the final management plan, final environmental impact statement, reflects and also responds to all the public comments that we've received that are substantive in nature. So unfortunately, you might be true, but I can only speak to the processes that I've been engaged in.
Well, I appreciate that, and I don't doubt that you as individuals in that agency are sincerely listening to the comments from our community here, but by law and by almost all actions that I've ever seen and certainly ever been involved in, they are just procedural. So that you do a good job at listening, and I don't mean you, I mean the government, but there's not a requirement that you actually take those concerns into the decision, and certainly I've seen very little evidence that they're seriously considered. It's more paternal, so like, you know, I listen to my kids and they have complaints, but I make the decisions in my house, and that's pretty much the way my experience has been with regard to the federal government. It's paternal more than democratic.
Well, thank you. And, you know, it's too bad because the federal government should represent individuals, communities, and the people of the United States. So,
One solution is all of us, those who work for or work in the federal government, if we believe in that value, then we stand up as employees and try to make it actually happen. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you. And thank you for calling, Adam.
Yeah, thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. So I have another call who wants to come on the air with you guys. I will take one more call, and then I want to sort of frame it, give you all a chance to share your main headline, and then I'm owning, and you know that I have my own nervousness about this. I'm really not full faith that this is a good movement. So I'm going to be asking you some of these things for clarity of many different issues that have been asked. So when the listeners listening right now know that we're going to go over some of these key points, and you know, this is all done with love and respect, and I really honor the both of you for coming in here and talking to all of us. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
My name is Philip Phil. I'm West Side, Kekaha Side. I've been a fisherman. I hunt, do all that kind of stuff. I've been to a number of these meetings, and Malia, you know, some of the comments that she's made just in the newspaper that discounts all the efforts and the emotions of the people here on the West Side, and we're basically, all our energies and emotions are ineffective. Kauai, the meetings on Kauai were ineffective because they were so emotional. That's what it's about. I've been here almost 30 years, and people are spilling out from their heart about what's been going on. And then you just abide by what you need to have to do, but no listen. Weighing the comments, is that because there's been so much emotional and personal comments that discount the Kauaians? It's just, does it not make any sense? It's almost like, why did we spend all this time trying to give inputs when things got volatile? And it wasn't because of the inputs, it was because of the spokesperson, Malia. Over the years, a lot of people have spent their time going over to Oahu to try to circumvent this, to be the emotions, while you basically go and hold by procedures. And I worked for a corporation, AT&T. I know you have to take step one, two, three, but you still have to listen to the people.
So, caller?
And one personality cannot discount the comments coming from people. And today's newspaper basically summed it up as it was ineffective to even come to Kauai. That's bull pucky, because basically you got the best feeling about the expansion of the whale sanctuary and the limitations of the fishing around Niihau.
So, caller, thank you so much for your starting this discussion with the punch and the power that these people have been experiencing. So we respect and we have gratitude that you're bringing that up. And is there another key point? Because then I would like to actually be listening to them for a moment, and then we will go through a few questions. And I have fostered out from different people, fishermen that have some concerns. And we're going to talk about them for a little bit, and then we'll take more calls. But I want it to be where we're actually looking at the core elements and kind of softening on the heavy emotion. But I appreciate
that
you're feeling these emotions.
Well, okay, I'll be less emotional, but we're talking about structure of basically having to do certain things as a NOAA organization, which is government, which we don't need to interject into basically what we understand better right here as being locals. You do the steps, the 1, 2, 3, the ABCs, but it's still, it cannot discount the emotions, but yet the emotions only come from the structure of the community to give good positive comments back, but they're not heard that way. They're heard only as emotions and ineffective, and that's a statement I want to make.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And then I'm going to ask them a few questions so that, like, for the person who's listening who's not even aware of the sanctuary, who doesn't even get the framework, many people like you know it pretty detailed, whether or not they've read the document, they know what their concerns are. But some people aren't even aware that this is here. So we're going to start with that, and then we will be taking more of this. But so I'm going to give them about 10 minutes here without taking calls. So thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. So that kind of saves me a little bit of trouble from saying there are many people who aren't really very excited about this. And what is the case that I've spoken with you, and you did alleviate some of my concerns. I'm going to come into where I feel a little bit better, a little bit more trust that there wasn't an ill intention in how this was written, because I actually did spend some time on it and kind of broke a sweat over it. You know, I still have my trust issues with the federal government. But can you start and tell us what and why this is being proposed? I know the whale sanctuary is already existing. How is this different? Where is the desire to go with it?
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much, Felicia. And, you know, I should start by saying that the Humpback Whale Sanctuary has been in existence since 1992. And this includes around the island of Kauai, around the north shore of Kauai, basically from Kilauea to Haena. So it's been here in existence for that amount of time. The reason that we're going through a management plan review process is several reasons. One is we're required to by Congress. So you can say, okay, check the box. But really, truly, what we're doing is that anybody who's a natural resource manager or who cares about the resources knows that you need to evaluate on a regular basis how well are you doing at protecting those resources. And a lot of new science has come around in that time since 1992. And I should say the last time a management plan review process took place was in 2002. So we're really looking at a plan that is now 13 years old. A lot's changed in terms of the condition of the resources, in terms of how we understand them scientifically, in terms of how we understand them and our relationship to them as communities, and how we use new tools to better manage those resources. So it's just good business to do that. We've also learned that it's ridiculous to think that the government can come in and manage resources. We have to do this collectively, and learning how to work with communities and draw on the knowledge that communities have and their relationship to resources is something that we're just learning how to do ourselves as part of the federal government. So we looked at this management plan review as being much more responsive to communities. I'll kind of walk you through the steps of how we got where we are today. And in 2010, we kicked off this so-called management plan review process with 10 scoping meetings around the Hawaiian Islands, including two meetings here on Kauai. And basically, that's what we call the scoping process, and it's an open book. We are there to listen and to say we're putting together a whole new management plan. It's high time that we do, and we want to hear from you what's important to address in this management plan. So it was an open book at that time. We received quite a few submissions, over 12,000 submissions at the time. And we took those in, and we looked at all of those comments. And I want to go back just to the last caller. We don't put a value judgment on comments that come in. And, you know, we think emotion is good. It's expressed conviction, something that you feel strongly about. But we also need that articulated. And there wasn't necessarily at all the public hearings from everybody a lot of articulation about what they want or don't want from us. And that's where it kind of falls apart a little bit. We need something to act on. So the emotion part is good. Then the articulation helps us to understand what the emotion is about. So back in 2010, we took in all those comments, we categorized them, and we took them to our Sanctuary Advisory Council, which is a 50-plus member council of community members. There's representation from each of the main Hawaiian Islands and from different user groups and from agencies as well. We organized those into 9 categories to be addressed in the management plan. Under our Sanctuary Advisory Council, we created 9 working groups. They had Sanctuary Advisory Council members on them, community members on them, technical experts on them. And those working groups spent over a year coming up with recommendations. And we actually had 176 recommendations coming out of those 9 working groups.
Can you name some of the people on the working groups that were from either Kauai or who people here might know?
Oh, gosh, I can't, and okay. I'm sorry.
Carlos Andrade was on it, yeah? Is that right? Carl Berg? Do I got the wrong group in there? Okay, no?
You know, right. It's just too far back for me to remember.
Right.
I'm sorry, we've done so much since then.
Okay.
And I'm sorry not to be able to speak to that. But then those recommendations from those 9 working groups, those 176 recommendations, went back to the Sanctuary Advisory Council. And basically, they recommended to us which of those we take on and incorporate into our management plan. And 87% of those, we tracked each recommendation, 87% of those that came from these working groups, of those recommendations, are now reflected in the management plan itself. For those that we couldn't incorporate in either because it was outside of our authority or somebody else was doing it, or we just felt like it was beyond our technical expertise, then we documented why those didn't get incorporated. And all of that's available to anybody off of our website. So the management plan that we put out for public comment, we had a 90-day public comment period with the management plan. Because there were regulatory changes in the management plan, including boundary expansion, new regulations, and, you know, the basic framework of moving from single species management to ecosystem-based management, it required legal action on our side, and it triggered a NEPA process.
NEPA?
National Environmental Policy Act, which means that we go back out to the public and hear from them. It triggered environmental impact statements, which is an analysis of the impacts both environmentally and also in terms of socioeconomic impacts.
And cultural comes from another process that is called, it's got another acronym.
It's the 106 process that we do separately because it's not a NEPA requirement.
Right.
We want there to be a focus strictly by Native Hawaiians and other interested parties on the cultural impact side of this. So that's done separately on a separate track. And that's going on right now. That process is going on right now.
Right. And there is this supposed to be co-management between the State Department of Land and Natural Resources and then the federal government through National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And it kind of came up at one of these meetings. One of the people said, well, mommy and daddy got in a fight, meaning that the state and the feds don't really want to. I thought it was kind of a fun way to frame that. What happened with that? Why is the DLNR less of a partner, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, less of a partner with NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, presently?
They're no less of a partner legally and also in the spirit of managing together. It's the same relationship that it's always been. However, when we got halfway through this five-year process to put out a draft management plan, the state said, you know, this is really an action under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act, a federal action. Why don't we step back through the public process? We worked with them. They were involved on the working groups. They helped develop a lot of the regulatory decisions that we made. They were included in the boundary expansion. But this was a previous administration. So they said, why don't we step back now? We have a new administration and see how the public responds to this. So this will be a NOAA-only proposal. They're no less of a partner than they've ever been, but they wanted to hear from the public. They are now, as we're going through the comments, will start to reengage as of, well, next week. We're still uploading comments, but our comment period has closed. We're still just managing all the comments, and they will reengage, starting to categorize all the different kinds of comments that we got received from the public and how we're going to respond to those.
So I'm going to ask a couple of questions just so the listener who's maybe anxious. Here's at least two of the ones that I want to ask. There will be a number, and I will invite other people's questions in, too, but so that they know what type of key questions that I think are really important. There are four options in this document here. There's option one, two, three, four. Like, one is no change, staying like this. And so Gene Souza has put it saying, well, think of it as, you can order a la carte rather than a dinner plate. You can pick one, two, three, or four, or you can say, well, I like this piece for here, that piece for there. I will say this is a pretty robust document, and, you know, somebody needs to be kind of bureaucratically savvy and have a lot of stamina to sit there and parse through something like this. So I get why people look at it and they don't even begin to look at it. The huge question, I feel like the pregnant question that's out there is, why can't there be an option of no sanctuary? Like, I went to a meeting yesterday, mostly with Kupuna, and, you know, I could see that there was really no tolerance for even wanting to sit there and look at the details. They're saying, we don't trust the feds. Everything is about the government getting what they want. That's a quote. You know, it's a hostile environment for Hawaiian people to find their ancestral land history when they work with the Bureau of Conveyances and the Bureau of Archives, which is the pathway that has been used for taking of Hawaiian lands, and when they're trying to look at what are their historical monuments. So there's a lot of emotion on that. Another very, very big question that is asked is, what about the military? How come the military isn't constrained in any way when, for many people, Well, not even just for many people. I don't think there's really a lot of argument. The biggest impacts in there is the military and what they're doing, and then the runoff. We have huge runoff, and we have the military, and neither one of those are impacted. So that's kind of a big deal, too. So those questions are ones that I'm going to want to be exploring. And then another one that I would want to be putting out there is to get, which made me feel better. I'm just going to give you that. It made me feel better when I'm picking out my very specific pieces of, I don't like this about being able to upset the subfloor and to have the, I got to be looking at it with the, what do you call it, when you disturb the bottom and you have the cloud there of what's there at the bottom. Do you remember the wording? I'll find it.
It's disturbing the seabed.
Disturbing the seabed.
Right.
That, you know, there's the cut and paste issue here and how some of these things were changed around. And I also made a pretty strong concern over cremated remains, and we'll learn a little bit more about that. I have Nina in here. Nina, when I first spoke with you and you were on this, tell me what it's called, the Sanctuary...
The Sanctuary Advisory Council.
The Sanctuary Advisory Council. You know, you gave me a really impassioned speech about caring for the ocean and feeling that profound kuleana. And I'm inviting you to share that. We're almost at the top of the hour, so I will have to take a break right at the top of the hour. But I want you to be able to share your heart space, because I think when people are looking, well, this is where I see a big divide. People are concerned and they're angry and they're going, ah, these people are doing something terrible. But when I talk to the people who are doing it, well, it's really good-hearted people. And with a really good-hearted intention, and the challenge is that the real problem is, I go, anytime the federal government gets their foot in the door, it's going to take way beyond what we have any interest in doing. NOAA is basically under the Department of Commerce. So, you know, what is the real goal behind these things? I'm not saying, but I'm just trying to give out where we're at on those. So I'm gonna do the top of the hour. It's not quite there, but I want to allow you, Nina, to speak freely. It's 8:59. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. And in the studio with me, I have Ann Walton. Can you tell us your title? You got a big one.
I'm a policy and planning advisor to the Humpback Whale Sanctuary.
So it's the entire islands, and then you've done stuff in other places.
Yeah, I have oversight over the program across all of the Hawaiian Islands. I live here on Kauai, and I also run an international component of the sanctuary program.
Okay, so basically you're pretty sharp. That's my point. You're up there and you know what's going on. So, and then Nina is a citizen who is helping with this. So, Nina, say your last name again.
Monasevich.
Monasevich. I don't know why I get nervous when I see that written down.
That's
like,
one.
I'm gonna slaughter this one. Okay, so Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and 808 Equipment Rental.
KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K224CQ Anahola K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
808 Equipment Rentals, providing tractor, bobcat, and BCS tiller services island-wide, including pasture mowing, garden bed raising, vegetation removal, terracing, gravel spreading, and more. 808 Equipment Rentals in Moloa'a. 823-1000.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We really, really love up our underwriters. Without them, you wouldn't be listening. Nina, how long did you spend working on this?
I've been involved since 2010, for 5 years.
5 years. So you must care about this.
Oh, deeply, yes.
You're not paid.
I am not paid.
You don't have anything personally to gain from this other than a healthy ocean?
I do not.
Why did you take the time to do this?
It's my dharma. It's my mission in life. I moved to Kauai in 1978. I've been diving, long-distance swimming, and using the ocean here pretty much on a daily basis most of that time. And so I've seen a really heartbreaking degradation of the ocean ecosystem during that time. So I really care deeply. I consider the ocean my home. It's the reason I moved to Kauai. I love the ocean. I love the whales and dolphins. So it just comes naturally to me to be involved with this. I also read a lot of science, so I'm very educated on what is going on with the oceans, the impact that's happening. So I have the personal experience, and I read the science, so I'm very concerned, alarmed, actually. And I'm one of the people who has been advocating for more protection, specifically speed limits, acoustic regulations, and those types of things that could actually offer more protection to the life in our waters. The process has been slow, and part of the reason is because there's so many different comments and different perspectives and people putting in their information. But I think it's been a really good process to be involved with, and I'm honored to be a part of it. There's some, like you said, some really good people, very intelligent, educated, wise people who have a lot to offer. And to me, from everything that I know about ocean regulations and conservation, that this is our best opportunity to actually protect the resources.
So do you dive or snorkel on the North Shore, Ka, Makua, Anini? Have you been out there much?
I haven't been scuba diving on the North Shore in many years, but I do still snorkel and swim on the North Shore.
I do a school program, and so a lot of it, I bring my students out there, and we look, and we do things. And I will tell you, even just since 2010, the environmental degradation has been profound in our community here. It's I kind of joke and say, oh, there's not any fish left, you know, but it's actually not funny, you know. And we just had Mehana Blake. I've got her by her last, I mean her maiden name, I just burned in my brain there, but she's a professor, and she did a great program, and we were there at Anini, and different kupuna were sharing, and how much fish had been there at different times, and how much the water had changed. A lot of it is the water that's coming off the island that's making a big difference. But without slamming anything, this has been a sanctuary, and it doesn't seem to be helping. You know, the place is still falling apart. So there's that concern. It seems like maybe we're getting less rain. You know, there's a lot that's being said about this very low frequency emissions that are coming out from the Navy's efforts. You know, I am no expert on that. PMRF people, if you want to call in, please do. 826-7771, because we would love to have your mana'o on this. But so we aren't seeing a big positive shift even in this protection time. How does this help our reef?
Well, there are very few protections right now with the way the plan is written for the last 18 years. There's very few regulations. So this management plan review actually brings in some regulations, including no dumping or discharge within the sanctuary boundaries. So that could potentially give us some protection and regulation with things like runoff, chemical, other dumping within the sanctuary. So it's finally some forms of actionable actions that the government can take to regulate and control water quality and other issues within the sanctuary.
Water diversion, that's really big, right?
Oh, yeah. Water diversion is huge.
And it doesn't affect that, correct?
Anne would have to answer that.
We'd have to talk about a specific place, whether it impacts it or not, but in general.
any human use activity that takes place in the watershed, and including water diversion, change in hydrology in any way, changes the impacts, the potential for impacts on the near shore and offshore areas of the marine environment. So I would say more than likely the answer is going to be yes, there's some level of impact.
Because it's difficult. Like when we look at that, I think it's raining less. We know it's raining less. So that's part of the challenge, right? We have really macro dynamic changes that have been happening in the weather systems, the big swirls that are up there, the big wind patterns. They've moved more towards the Arctic. They've moved more north, so we get less strength of the wind. I go to these different science forums. I'm not a scientist. I'm regurgitating what I've learned, but that the cloud layer is actually higher. And so as it's higher, it's hitting less water. So we have less water, but we have more straws going into that aquifer. We have more wells being drilled. We have more water being used. So does that say, okay, well, then there could be less wells upstream? You know, I mean, it's really very difficult to see where all this goes to.
It goes downstream, you can be sure of that.
It goes downstream, but maybe it all gets used up. So, and let's do two of these questions, and then I'm going to open it up for callers, because I know people are listening and they want to come in. Why can't there be an option of no sanctuary? Is that correct? Or that's what we were told yesterday, that was off the table. It has to be option 1, 2, 3, or 4. I believe we were told it's an act of Congress to say it's not here. But at the same time, they said they don't think they're going to put it around Niihau.
Well, those are a couple questions there. But in regards to the de-designation of the sanctuary itself, correct. We would have to go back to Congress to de-designate a sanctuary. It's unprecedented. It's never been done before. It does take an act of Congress. And then also, remember, we have a co-manager partnership with the state. So we would have to go back to the governor as well to de-designate the sanctuary. I think the question is a better asked question is, are we doing it well? Are we doing it right? And if not, how can we do it better? And that's typically the way that we've approached the management plan review process. And I think, you know, case in point, what you've said about taking the school kids down to Nini and what you've observed yourself. In the last 5 years, there have been probably unprecedented changes. The causes of those changes in the marine environment are not well understood. It's a very dynamic system. And that's why, in part, we've moved from single species to ecosystem-based management. It makes no sense whatsoever, scientifically, culturally, or otherwise, to focus on a single species. It lives within a greater environment that's influencing and impacting the conditions of that species, but everything else within the marine environment.
So thank you for that. And is it accurate? Like I felt like what I heard yesterday from Hans... Do I have his name right? Hans?
Yes.
Van Tilburg, that they're probably not going to do this thing around Niihau. They're probably not going to put it around Niihau, is what was said. Is that possible? Can they say no? Okay, we're not going to put it at Niihau.
It's possible, but I should start by saying there hasn't been a determination. The public comment period just closed at 6 o'clock on last Friday evening. We haven't been... able to see all the comments yet. That's not the single driver either. So there'll be a determination on whether it meets the criteria to be a part of the sanctuary, but also whether it's in the best interest of both the state and NOAA to keep that as an alternative. So there's no decision.
People could see public comment by looking at www.HawaiiHumpbackWhale.NOAA. .gov. People can go in to HawaiiHumpbackWhale.NOAA.gov to see the public comment. That was the real pressing question. Why do we have no option to ask what we want? And I think that's what we heard from, I think the man said his name was Phil. I think that's where there's all this rage is nobody asked, can we put this telescope up there? In fact, they did do a public inquiry. They sent out 60 letters to Hawaiians. I'm putting that in quotes. They got 39 responses. 4 said yes. So that was enough to be told, okay, yeah. Yeah, that's a yes. And I know that there was 7,000 signatures here on, I think it was Kauai, maybe it is statewide, 7,000 signatures were said that they didn't want to do that. I'm getting, my phone is kind of going off. Well, I'm going to ask this one later because it's a little too strong for me to, I mean, a little complicated for me to read right now. Do you have somebody on the line? Okay, so I'll read it while they're on the line. Aloha, you're on the air.
Saying that Phil talked about the telescope, I've been talking about the whale sanctuary.
No, I didn't say you were talking about the telescope. I said
you said, Phil, this gentleman that was talking about the telescope.
Okay, well, let me correct that. I meant Phil who called was talking
I'm
about...
I'm the Phil that called.
I know. So
earlier.
I'm correcting that, and then I was meaning that call plus when we look at what's happening with the telescope.
Okay,
I apparently
can I just make one
them.
Statement?
Yes.
And I am the earlier caller...
I know.
That talk? Okay. You know, when you're still doing the evaluation of the 3,071, whatever was in the Garden Island newspaper, why don't we make it a more valuable conversation for KKCR being a good conduit to give the information out versus making statements about... no articulation, only emotions. I'm emotional right now, but what do you want to articulate about when there has been a lot of articulations about how we feel about this?
Phil,
and why don't you evaluate? Why don't you evaluate before you use the conduit of KKCR to put out information that really isn't relevant right now until you do evaluate how these comments are? Why don't you give it some merit?
Well, I invited them in here because I have been speaking out in questioning what they're doing, not very comfortable with the choice. My statement had been really strongly, can you please push this out another 90 days? Because I found this information was overwhelming to understand.
Right.
So,
and so to evaluate what was put in the Garden Island newspaper, it's premature for you to do a radio station. You're giving information out to people that really, for all the ones that have given all their sweat equity into this, you are really misrepresenting until you do, Noah, evaluate the 3,071 comments. It's not fair.
Thank
it's
you,
not
caller.
Fair to the public
you,
right now for you guys to do this like
well,
this.
Well, I invited them in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so that is a perspective, and so wanting an analysis. I am inviting other callers in, 826-7771. If you would like to call in and give your questions, it's a good time to be asking those questions.
Felicia, I do have a few names to give you who are people on working groups from Kauai.
Okay.
And other names that people would recognize. One of them is Phil Fernandez, Gordon Labetz, Sharon Pomeroy, Adam Pack, Mark Lammers, Marsha Green, and myself.
Okay.
And that's just a handful of, that's what just I could remember from my memory of
okay.
who was on the working group.
Maka'ala, wasn't she on
there? Oh, yes, and Maka'ala was. Sorry.
Okay.
She was as well.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, aloha, Felicia. Thanks for doing such a great job getting this out to the community. This is Dave Stewart.
Hi, Dave.
Lived in Honolulu. Like that last brother for the west side?
Yes.
Right on, brother. I'm emotional, too, you know, because... you know, I've lived in Honolulu for 45 years. I've seen a lot of changes, and I've seen the government take over so many different things that just, you know, like taxes and stuff, taxing the Hawaiians off the lands and stuff like that. And to me, this is just one more thing, you know, that's going to put a burden on our people of Kauai. To have the guys on the west side to worry about Niihau, I'm worried about that too. But you know what I'm really worried about is just the fact that the government's going to come in and take over and so and supposedly co-manage with the state of Hawaii, and take over the entire North Shore. You know, if this does pass, one thing I can promise I will do is I'm going to make a plaque for my great-great-great-great-grandkids and all the people that are for this sanctuary. I'm going to have their names on it, and it's going to say, these are the people that destroyed the North Shore. These are the people is the reason why you can't go in the water. You know, there's a lot of sanctuaries in California. No surfing, no walking on the beach. They become study areas. And that's, it's just, that right there is crazy.
So let me ask you on that, just so that we're being accurate. I know that Papahanaumokuakea is what's called a monument, and that's different than a sanctuary. Anne's nodding her head. Is the area where you can't walk on the beach or surf, is that a monument?
No, I can't speak correctly on that. I just, people from the mainland called me because they know that I oppose the sanctuary 100%. I would like to see the sanctuary be more of an educational thing for the people. I do not want to see the sanctuary be able to tell me I can't walk on that beach because there's a monk seal over there. I do not want the sanctuary to say, we're going to close down this area because we're going to do a study on the reef. I do not want the federal government to have that kind of power over us.
So let's let Anne respond to that. Anne, do you have something to say?
Yeah, Dave, thanks for your concern and your input. I appreciate it. And I just want to go back to something really quickly. In no way on this radio show or any other time have I discounted emotion. I've simply said that if you could express what that emotion is about, it helps us a lot better to respond to it.
And I respect you for that, Anne. And I first met you at that one community meeting, and I thought you were a straight shooter. I don't feel that way personally about Malia Chow, but you, I do feel that. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Well, thanks, Dave. And, you know, I just want you to know that there's nothing in our proposed plan that really prohibits any kind of human use activity here on Kauai or on Niihau, for that matter.
Completely, I understand that super clear, but that's why I said on that plaque, it's going to be for my great-great-great-grandchildren, because once the government is in and taking over the whole North Shore in Niihau, they're going to keep moving. I heard it from you guys. You guys want to take over all the Hawaiian Islands, and, you know, and then people from Nebraska can go, oh, yeah, I've been to Hawaii once. Yeah, it should all be a preserve. You know, then the other 49 states will have as much say as us. And right now it's state waters, and now the people of Hawaii get their word more powerful than the people from the mainland. But if it's a federal sanctuary, we're history. So that's a big concern, that we're going to lose our voice.
Now,
we've lost our voice so many times before that I just don't want to lose it anymore, but for the sake of our children, you know?
Can I just say one thing? You know, I appreciate you taking the time, and, you know, we're past the public comment period. You can imagine how tired we are as well. We've been doing this for 5 years, but the reason I'm here is because the dialogue hasn't stopped just because the public comment period has. And we still, those of us who work here on Kauai, live in this community, we still want this dialogue to continue. We still want to work together with those who care about protecting the resources, which I believe is most everybody on this island. We still want to continue the education programs that we've been engaged in for the last 20 years.
Well, that I could support, but being just taking over the state waters, I will never, ever, as long as I'm breathing, support that. Just because this is got to be home rule. People on the North Shore should be able to say what goes on the North Shore. People on the West Side should be able to say what goes on the West Side. When you give it to the government, we've lost already. And, you know, I'm going to say something that most people won't want to hear, and that's the kind of guy I am.
Okay, one last comment, because I got people holding.
Okay, I'll be real quick. But you know what? Most of the people that want to help this island and say that it's this is wrong, that's wrong, this wrong. You know what? The Hawaiians want to say this, but they won't say it because they have more aloha than this guy right here does. But you know what? They're the problem. They should go home, because the problem on this island is the people. There's too many people.
Are you Hawaiian?
I'm not Hawaiian. I'm pure Irish. My wife is pure Hawaiian. My kids are half-half. I wasn't born here. I was born in San Francisco, but I was raised in the taro patches of Wainiha and Hanalei. And I got a lot of passion for this because of my children. And I tell you, I'm making that plaque ready because I know you guys are going to shove this down our throat anyway. All the comments didn't matter. What I'm telling you right now, I'm just venting, you know, and I don't mean anything personal to anybody, but I just know this is the wrong move. And the people that support it, you're going to say Dave Stewart was right in 20 years from now. Thank you.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Dave.
Aloha.
Aloha. So, again, he's sharing the same perspective. It's not about who you are as individuals. It's about the federal government, and just people have really, I think, lost a lot of trust in what that represents. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Nick Lopinkis from the west side of Kauai.
Thank you for calling.
Hi, I just want to thank Mason Chalk for coming in and talking a little earlier. I really respect him as one of our more politicians on the stand. I think he's been good for Kauai, and as well as the rest of our politicians that, you know, carry the island of Kauai. And I'm calling in regards to basically Kauai in general. You know, I woke up one day and I've been living on the west side of Kauai my whole life. So that makes 37 years.
Okay.
And I've been commercial fishing all the way up to Kaula Rock, around Ni'ihau, and around Kauai my whole life. And the type of commercial fishing I do is Hawaiian-style hook-and-line fishing. I don't net. When I go diving, I only use three prongs. I only take what I need for my kapuna or my friends or family. Now, that's being pono. That's being the right thing. Now, what comes down to a lot of the conflicts is people have a hard time understanding what we're going to call the common people of Kauai, because our ethnic diversity is so great. I mean, everybody lives amongst everybody else here. You see everybody at the store, and we're all trying to do the right thing in general when it comes to the common people of Kauai. Now, I was at the sanctuary meeting on, I believe it was May 5th in Waimea, and I heard a lot of comments, and I just want to make sure that the people who are there and hearing emotions and things being said, that a lot of things are being said by other people before each person at each meeting. For the simple reason, they give us 3 minutes to talk about our livelihood, something we've been doing our whole life, and we love so much, and the things we do to keep us in check on this island. I mean, all we have is the ocean. We have the mountain. We have the rivers. That's what we have. And when we look at this federal sanctuary that is being proposed, you know, it really comes down to where we have a lot of mistrust in the federal government and what they're proposing in the future for us. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, like I said, I was at the meeting, and I really want to thank the public of Kauai for everything they've done. They've come out, they've come together, they've shown their emotion. They really, I mean, have put their hearts out, said it like it was about Ni'ihau. Hawaiians came out and spoke. I thank them so much for actually coming out and telling them how they felt and how much our culture on Kauai means. And even in Hawaii, all across Hawaii, we're not that different. You know, it's just on the islands like Kauai, you know, then you go like, say, Molokai, you go Big Island, we're still a little bit more what you would call common local style. You know, you're getting to Maui, you still get them, but you're becoming, the population goes up, you go to Maui, the population goes up. And then, you know, depending on the land and natural resources, it starts to kind of fade a little more. Now, out here, we still rely on our resources. And I listened to a couple of people that are in there today. I'm not sure what her name was, but they're all advisors. And who they're advising, we're getting to the bottom of that. I like to talk to the chiefs, like the rest of us do. But what we're doing out here in Hawaii is we're still trying to feed ourselves. And I take strong offense to being put in a position of saying that I don't know my ecology of my ecosystem on Kauai. And someone that comes from another place and comes here and tells me all of a sudden they know more than we do, I take strong offense to that, because I know what's going on this island. And you're saying if you're going to federalize our land to the top of the mountain, out to however far they feel that they need to in their federal sanctuary, okay, that's a pretty broad scope of basically openly saying you're going to dictate our lives.
Well, caller, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name in the beginning, but I just wanted, this is Ann, I just wanted to comment on a couple of things that you've said. First of all, thank you for your pono fishing practices. And if everybody were to practice fishing as you do, then perhaps we wouldn't be in the situation we're in today. So I appreciate that. I want to say that, you know, we are not proposing anything on the west side. That where we are proposing is from the high water mark out to the 100-fathom isobath. So it's all within the marine environment. It's not within the watershed area and the upland areas. So I wanted to be really clear about what our range of proposal is, strictly within the marine environment. And I also want to say thank you for coming to the public hearings. But there still is a lot of misinformation out there, and our purpose today is really to try and correct some of that misinformation so that as we move forward, we're moving forward with a common understanding of what the proposal's about. So I'd be happy to discuss any of the particular pieces of the proposal that there's still either confusion on or disagreement with, and maybe we can come to some common understanding.
Well, you see, what I am is the portrayal of no portrayal of the people of Hawaii not caring about their ecosystem or playing us out to be idiots is not very polite. That's what I take offense to. And now all of a sudden, you saying to me right now over the phone that all of a sudden you're talking about from the shoreline to 100 fathoms, where a moment ago you're talking about an ecosystem-based management plan. I know you got many plans discussed, okay, A, B, or C, a la carte, whatever you want to call it, okay? The ecology starts from the very top all the way to the bottom. The estuaries of the west side of Kauai, the largest estuary in the state of Hawaii, was destroyed in the early 1900s when they drained the swamp from Waimea to Mana. Everybody knows that.
Right.
You know, what are you going to do about that? How are you going to stop people from selling bleach in Hawaii? Clorox, which you pour on your drain, goes down to the waste management plant, and they put it in the ocean. Well, I'll openly say things like that. But getting back to what we're talking about, the National Marine Whale Sanctuary, trying to encompass Ni'ihau, trying to expand your boundaries.
Do you have a direct question?
It comes back, I do, it comes back to saying, are you going to allow the state of Hawaii to make the last call on this? Because everybody who's listening should read the compact agreement between the federal government and the state of Hawaii. Are you looking to take away the right of the governor to make the last say on these changes?
Now, if you're familiar with the compact agreement, which is an agreement between the state of Hawaii and NOAA that describes what our working relationship is, the procedures and protocols for working together as co-managers within the state waters that are also designated a National Marine Sanctuary. And if you read that compact agreement, you'll see that the governor has the last right of refusal, as we say, meaning that the governor has to sign off on anything that's proposed as a National Marine Sanctuary activity or action within state waters. So that, as you see it in the compact agreement, is the not only the procedure and protocol, but it's legally binding. So the governor really has the last word. And I just want to correct something else that you said. At no point have we ever said that the people of Kauai don't understand what's going on in the marine environment and discounted that in any way. We wouldn't have had so many public hearings here and gone out to hear from the public and also responded from the first time we had the hearings in 2010 to the public input if we felt like that. We don't at all. We think that those who live within a place and use that place, whether it's for their livelihood, for feeding their family, or for recreation. They're the ones who understand that environment
yeah.
more than anybody.
I just need to interject for a second. Because I don't hold what's called everybody likes to throw around that gets these jobs with NOAA, a degree in marine biology, right? I can't get your job, okay? I can't sit in the place you're in. So all us locals who are simple, common people, who most of us are just high school educated people, sit in a position where I called recently to try get a position, and I had no way of getting the position, even though I was overqualified in my abundance of knowledge of the ecology of the ecosystem of Kauai. But because of I am not, don't have the credentials, I can't hold the position. So it kind of comes down to it's that's why I really respect our our politicians, and I'm trusting in them because they are the people. You know, our politicians of Kauai, they are people, you know. And if you notice, that's why they're here, because we know they're part of our community. And I thank them, and I really thank everybody for really pouring their hearts on this. And I want to end it saying that I love whales. I'm not against seals. Okay, I like seals. I've never had a problem with the seals. I love turtles. Okay, I love dolphins. I'm a commercial captain. I drive around these animals. Okay, I've seen animals flourish over the years. No one in Hawaii harpoons seals. They don't harpoon no turtles. They don't harpoon no whales. And nobody is using a harpoon all the way to Alaska and back, which is the national ban on whaling. And our endangered species program in this country is doing a good job protecting our animals. Our endangered species are protected by federal laws already. And I thank our government for putting them in place and protecting them. And I follow those laws that are already in place.
Great point, caller. Thank you so much. So thank you. Thank you for calling. Are you there? Aloha. I've been getting a blizzard of things. I get it from different areas. I've been getting a bunch of emails. And so I was looking at one here where a rather detailed statement with multiple attachments was sent in. And I see that the response that came back from a Russell Callender, do you know who that is, Russell Callender? It's the Acting Administrator for Ocean Services and Coastal Zone Management.
Yes.
It's basically a form letter, you know, from a rather robust package that was sent in. So the comment to me is how frustrating it is, you know, the amount of work that was put into making that comment. I'm just looking at what creates this level of distrust. So I'm seeing that. I'm seeing letters in here from people who are on earlier subcommittees or
right.
special groups that, you know, they're frustrated. There's a lot of frustration. And I don't think it's at you guys in particular. To me, what I feel like I've been hearing is when there is no option 5 that says none of the above, that's I think, probably the piece that puts people in a corner is when it's like, you get to choose if you want this meal, or this meal, but you can't go to a different restaurant or you can't skip the meal. That seems to be the big issue.
Well, I think the record was already established at the time of designation of the sanctuary back in 1992.
But they don't want it anymore. That's the point. They want to be able to say no. And there's no option to say no, and that is the chafe point.
No, during the public comment period, people can say anything that they want.
In 1992.
No, even today.
Well, we've been hearing consistently many, many people saying no, whether they're informed from the right place or not. I mean, that's where I find the tension point is. Am I seeing something different than you are?
Well, I think the interpretation of no has been that we're going to ignore no. And that isn't a fact. And I'm sorry I can't speak specifically to the response that somebody received from Russell Callender, but we've responded to no comments here from the sanctuary program in regards to what's proposed in the management plan. So let's be really clear. We are looking at all comments. One of the options was not in the array of four different alternatives. We have a no action alternative, which means status quo. It stays the same way.
People want
Zero. I understand.
Uh-huh.
But the record was already established in 1992 of a need for a sanctuary, but just let me complete this. Then when we went back to the public in 2002, when we revised the management plan, and then 2010 when we scoped, went out and did public scoping for this management plan as well. It was felt like at those key times, those key points in reviewing our management plan, that this sanctuary still had value. And in fact, during the 2002 review of the plan, what came out of that process was that we had to look broader than just at a single species, humpback whales. So we're following sort of the lineage here of the development of the plan as it matures over time, the sanctuary as it's matured over time. And there has been no point where there was a compelling reason to de-designate the sanctuary. That doesn't mean that you can't comment on it at this time, but I think the history has been established that it would be very difficult to de-designate a sanctuary, not to mention unprecedented, but it doesn't mean it can't happen, to go back to Congress and justify what is felt has both significance here in Hawaii and national significance as well. But people are free to comment in any way that they want. And as you noted earlier, you can take the dinner plate or you can take the smorgasbord approach to this, including bringing in something that you want that's different from what's being offered in the package. Everything will be looked at with equal consideration.
Right. And I respect what you all are trying to do. And I just know, like, any of the TSA agents, they... I don't want to go through. I don't hardly fly anymore because of TSA. I feel like I have surrendered my power. I go through there, and I am so sad for the United States of America. I don't feel safe because of them. I feel controlled and damaged. My individual liberty, my freedom is impacted. And I think that that's the kind of reaction that I'm hearing to all of this. It's like, it's not whether I want to go through the body scan or I want to get fondled or whatever. I don't want to go through any of it, and that's because I don't feel that it makes me safe. And so I'm seeing a parallel. That's what I'm hearing.
You know, and Felicia, I appreciate that, but I think you have to realize there are three individuals here who work for the sanctuary program. We live in Kauai. We're part of this community. You know, our children go to school with your children and so forth. We are not TSA. And we are not the tax collector, and we are not this, that, and the other thing. I think that it's very hard, and I understand that the reputation of the federal government precedes us. But we are known. We have a very specific proposal. We've worked very hard to let it be a reflection of what of the voices from Hawaii.
Yeah.
And at the same time, here we are. We're past the comment period, and we still want to hear from the public
and
engage.
And I thank you. And I wasn't scolding. I was just trying to articulate. That's the kind of feeling that I'm getting. It's not about you. Here is another caller. Thank you for holding.
Hi, Felicia. This is Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
I just had a couple of comments. First,
we got an echo. Can you turn your radio off? Do you have a radio?
It's off. I'm sorry.
Okay.
First, the statement that this goes back to 1992. It's unprecedented to ever turn the clock back and remove this woman just straight from their mouth. I'm not attacking her. And then the second comment is I haven't talked to or heard one person, not one, who's for it, who doesn't work for NOAA or the federal government. If they're out there, I'd like to hear it.
Well,
but I have not heard one.
I am Nina Matasevich. I do not work for the federal government or have any employment in any way, shape, or form.
No, but you can't turn the clock. You can't take this away. It'll just progress and progress and progress like everything else. And that's my comment, and I'll get off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that, you know, he did articulate that when it – that's the fear, is go, okay, they said yes in 1992. There's never going to be a no. And so each time there are things that create change or create these big grabs of power, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I mean, what you're feeling is a wash of so many different emotions from so many different things, from the loss of a pet in the backyard that maybe gets euthanized or sold or given away without the agreement of the parent. That's some of the things that we've been talking about. We have somebody like Governor Ige. He comes and he speaks to the island. He doesn't even bring any of these things up. That's where there's this separation. Like, what you hear in these public comment areas or on the radio is you hear the people who are engaged and who do have a strong opinion, but you know, there's probably a whole lot of people who aren't even paying attention or who don't come forward because maybe they're intimidated.
I'd just like to say to the last caller, sorry, Anne, that if you do look at the website that Felicia gave about the regulations.gov, there are thousands of comments in support of the sanctuary by organizations and individuals, and some very interesting comments. You can really learn a lot. It's very intriguing, and I'm just working my way through them. But, yeah, I would say at least half of, or if not more, are in support of the sanctuary.
And are they from Hawaii?
Most of the ones I've read are.
So everybody asks us this, and you're not required to put where you're from when you comment. So we can tell only about 50% of the, and this is just at first flush, 50% are on average are putting where they're actually from. And so everyone's asking that. We'll have some calculations on that, but the total number, but we don't. And it will only be a sample because not everyone is saying where they're actually from. But I just wanted to say to the last caller, who is Tracy, also that, you know, I think that what you're talking about is you know, often referred to as federal creep. And that's not our intention, but if there is a problem and it's in the marine environment and it's something that we can help bring a solution to, then of course we want to be able to do that. But we'd like to be able to work with communities to do that, because if an area or a community is sustainable over time, it's going to have to be self-sustainable. And communities need to learn how to work together with each other, but also with others from outside of that community who maybe can bring some resources or expertise to that as well. I'm not saying that's required everywhere. There's many self-sufficient communities and good examples, but there are many that can use the support and the help. And there have been many communities around Hawaii that have come to us even since the public comment period started and said, we would really like to have you come work with our community on water quality or fish pond restoration or on OPE monitoring program. So I would look at it as, if we're going to be here, is there some way that you can make use of NOAA as a resource to help enhance your own efforts to improve the resources?
Thank you for that. And John Gordon will be up at the top of the hour with Jazz with John, and we have another caller. Aloha, thank you for holding.
My name is Dave. I live in Ke Kaha, and I just had a question about the panel and or any listeners about what is the science behind what potentially could change in the sanctuary, meaning enlarging or changing it. What kind of environmental impact and marine environment will it have from, you know, bottom of the ocean all the way to the surface? You know, that's my question, and I'll wait off air to listen to your answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Dave. That's a very broad question, but I can answer it in a very broad way, and that is that the way that we're looking at this move from single species to ecosystem-based management is to say, what are the important components of an ecosystem? Their water and water quality, their habitats, their species, and their human beings that live in or are dependent on those natural resources. So when we've proposed some of the regulatory changes, and it depends on which alternative you look at, of course, the main purpose is to identify areas where there are heavy impacts to species, habitats, water quality, and the communities that are dependent on them. And that's the approach that we took to recommending that certain areas we would implement regulatory packages in those areas. Of course, we work with the state on that as well in our preferred alternative. And the way that we came to this recommendation on the preferred alternative, which is alternative number 3, was to work together with the state on making those decisions where those kinds of regulations would be most applicable, at least at this time.
Thank you. I don't mean to be real specific here, but I'm going to hand you my book. And on page...
I don't have my glasses.
Okay. Well, on page... Do you need reading glasses? Anybody have reading glasses? On page 49, under alternative 2,
yes.
I get when there can be bumbled deletions. I've worked on a lot of things. Uh-huh. In this one piece here, there is both something saying, it's been changed from before, but it goes, the prohibition against discharge would be removed. The prohibition against altering submerged lands would be removed. I don't like how that sounds. And then down towards the bottom, it says special management area regulations would include prohibitions against. Now, here's saying exactly the opposite. Altering submerged lands and discharge. So in about an inch and a half, it's saying, okay, you can do it. And it's saying you can't. Like, why is, you know, and it, before yeah. it didn't say you can't. It said you can. So, like, I'm going, okay, they wanna mine the seafloor.
Well, this is an anomaly that was in the existing regulations that have been on the books since 1997. The regulations that are on the books currently today that have been in place since then said in actuality that it was illegal within the sanctuary, or we were to enforce if somebody had a permit from a different agency and that permit was to violate the disturbing of the seabed or a discharge and within the sanctuary waters, but it was somebody else's regulation and somebody else's permit, but if they were in violation of the terms of the permits, we were to enforce it. Nobody looked at that regulation, I believe, since 1997, because it made no sense whatsoever. One thing that we did very early on is to go back and look at the existing regulations and say, first of all, what regulations don't make sense? They're structured in such a way they're not enforceable. They don't have any legal basis. That was one of those regulations. Which regulations are not clearly written so the consumer, the ocean user, can't clearly understand them? Can we clean those up, not change them substantively, but make the language easier to understand so that those ocean users, when looking at our regulations, will understand what they can and can't do? And then the third area was to put in new regulations. So then, in Alternative 2 in some places in federal waters, but then Alternative 3 in state waters, then we put those two regulations in for the first time, and that was disturbing the seabed, where you cannot disturb the seabed, and the other was to discharge. So it appeared that we took them out and put them in.
It sure does.
But we didn't actually take them out because there were no regulations to begin with. It was like trick language.
So I do some teaching, mm-hmm. so I'm going to be your teacher here. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're the one who corrects this. Are you the one who sits there and does the edit?
No, somebody else will, but I will make note of it.
Okay, so on page 49, under 5.5, alternative 2, I'm putting a big red mark around it and saying, please clarify.
Okay, thank you, and we appreciate it.
That isn't clear.
That's hugely helpful to us.
Okay,
thank you.
Please clarify that so that somebody can look at it and go, okay. And then, so I have your commitment. This isn't about mining the seabed.
There's no existing regulation about mining the seabed.
But you're not saying, hey, you can mine the seabed if you want to. Because that's when I looked at that. That's where I got all you know, worried about. And then when I looked at the National Marine Sanctuary, it put me, go to 310, you know, it send me off to another place, and it talks about cremated remains mm-hmm. needing a public mm-hmm. hearing or a public process and a permit and all of that. And I'm looking at Hanalei Bay, I'm looking at Kalihiwai, I'm looking at Kahili. Those are three cemeteries for me, full of
right.
friends. Haena also.
Right.
This is where our friends and loved ones are put. Why does it say don't do that without this whole public process? What did that really mean, and how do we know that we can rest on that?
Okay, so this is another thing that I've talked to Felicia about, and again, we'll clarify, and I've made note of it, and I've talked to other folks at the sanctuary, but there is a disturbing the seabed regulation, meaning you are prohibited from discharging. I have to think what we're doing here. From discharging in the sanctuary. And in that, there's an exception.
Prohibited from putting cremated remains in the...
You're prohibited from discharging anything
okay.
in the sanctuary.
Including specifically cremated remains.
Well, that's where there's an exception. So you have to read through the entire regulation, and there's a series of exceptions of things that you can, in fact, discharge. One of them is an exception is for traditional ceremonial purposes. You may discharge into the sanctuary. And it gives an example of lays, and lanterns as examples of ceremonial things that you can discharge into the sanctuary. Now, our interpretation is that if it's for traditional ceremonial purposes, that you're putting human remains into human ashes into the sanctuary, then that's an exception that we agree with. I have made note from our previous conversations and with many other people to put in that example also the human remains. So.
And when you say traditional ceremonies, I think you need to clarify to all ethnicities or all human beings, because we have this division piece about, like, what color your skin is. So, like, somehow, you know, and I'm in the place, the hot spot of hearing it constantly, is kind of white people, we don't have any tradition. We're not indigenous. No, this is my planet, too. We're indigenous right. to somewhere. So, there are all kinds of colors of people that go into the bay, and probably more of the people who are transplanted here don't end up with room in the cemetery, you know. We have another caller. Thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Shyla Moon.
Hi, Shyla Moon.
Hi, Malia.
Felicia. It's Felicia, Anne, and Nina. Malia is not here.
Oh, hi, Anne.
Hey, Shyla. How are you?
Nina's not here. Well, to follow up with Nina's comment that she's not involved with NOAA. She is on the advisory council, or she was, but she is part of that.
And she is not paid to do it.
She's not paid, but she does have connections to NOAA, so that's why she's advocating for them.
Can I just make a comment on that?
No, because I'm calling in, and I'm going to make my comments, and you can talk after, right. And I'm going to hang up.
No problem.
So the compact agreement that was originally stated with the state of Hawaii through Governor Cayetano in 1998, it stays and promises it's going to stay a single species sanctuary, and now we're changing that. There's a few things, such as the cremation deal. I know that a lot of locals are really concerned about that, and what you're not saying is that you need a special permit to release your remains into the ocean or whatever. And who knows if you can be denied of that special permit. A lot of the comments online, there's like, what, maybe 3,000 comments online. And there was a comment about 50-50 maybe from Hawaii because they don't say where they're from, which is true. You know, I represent a lot of people that really believe that they do truly believe our comments should only be from Hawaii, because it is our area that is being affected, not the rest of the world or the other, you know, other 49 states. It's really personal that we keep these comments Hawaii-based. It's really unfortunate that it's NOAA and it's so big and anybody can comment. The comment period ended on June 19th, and you folks are still holding meetings about the whale sanctuary after the comment period with special interest groups. There was a Section 106 meeting on Kauai at the Lihui Library.
That's invited.
And that was, it doesn't matter if it's state or federal. It's still ongoing process that not just anybody can go to these meetings. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that at that meeting there was nothing really confirmed or anything, but I'm just concerned that they are pushing it forward and they're not being honest. And it is an agenda, and it's not welcome here by everyone. I don't know why everyone's painting it like we have. I mean, my friend from Massachusetts called me once and told me, why are the whales dying in Hawaii? I'm like, they're not, but there's some that died like years ago. And she was like, well, we need to protect them because they're dying like a massive rate. And I'm like, where are you reading this? And someone like emailed her to support this whale sanctuary. And that's why she called me. But anyway, those are my comments. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Felicia.
Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and continue your conversation.
Okay aloha.
Thank you, Shyla. This is Nina. I just wanted to make the statement of that, in all honesty, I would be here even if I wasn't on the Sanctuary Advisory Council or involved in NOAA in any way. I've been an ocean advocate all my life. and I'm very acutely aware of the dangers that the whales are facing, which is about 600,000 marine mammals are killed annually by net entanglement and fisheries bycatch. A number not much smaller than that are killed by vessel strikes. And that's not counting climate change, acidification, starvation from lack of food. So the whales do have plenty of threats, not just the whales. All marine species are under major threats. So my voice in being here is to be a voice for the dead animals in the dying ocean. I have no agenda other than I would like to see a healthy, thriving, positive change so that the oceans can regenerate and replenish themselves so that there's enough fish for everyone, including humans and all species on the planet, to live abundantly. That's why I'm here.
Thank you, Nina, and thank you for coming in, and thank you for calling into the show. I apologize that you were interrupted when you did call. Thank you for being constructive and emailing me and meeting with me. I'm glad that you had an opportunity to come in here, and thank you so much. I know that there are a few opportunities. We're going to go to the county council report in just a moment. So very quick, can you please tell people how they can continue to be heard, whether they want something from NOAA or they don't want anything from NOAA? Like, how can they continue to be heard? There's a few openings, and there's a meeting next month.
Well, we're through the public comment period, as Felicia said, but as you know, we have an office in Lihue. Many of you know me and Waltner, Jean Souza, and you're welcome to come into the office anytime. We would like to continue the dialogue. For areas of confusion, we would like to sit down, whether in small groups or one-on-one, and try and clear up those understandings. So this isn't the end of the dialogue, but it is the end of the formal comment period as of June 19th, last Friday at 6 p.m. But we are open to continuing the conversation and appreciate any opportunity for continued dialogue. So thank you.
And mahalo to both of you for coming in. Mahalo, Ian, for helping. My angel son is off to Wyoming for the summer. He always has a very good time working there on a ranch. So I wish him well on that. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, John Gordon, for writing a great letter to the editor the other day. And expect to hear from me. This man is so bright. He's Jazz with John, but he's an enormous resource for this community, and we will help him to do that even more so. So you're going to hear the county council report. I will be there tomorrow. I hope many other people will be, too, in the words of Thomas Jefferson. We don't have a vote of the majority of the people. We have rule by the majority of the people who participate. So we need more people to participate. Thank you. This has been Kauai Soapbox. Felicia, aloha.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of June 22nd. There will be a council committee meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m., and the meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the committee meeting agenda. The Public Works Parks and Recreation Committee has a request from Committee Chair Kagawa for the County Engineer and the Environmental Services Management Engineer to provide a briefing on the new hours of operation at all county refuge transfer stations and the rationale for the modification of operating hours. The Planning Committee has a request from Council Chair Raposo for the Planning Director and the County Attorney to explain the process that occurs before and after Public Access, Open Space, Natural Resources, Preservation Fund Commission select properties for acquisition, including a detailed summary of the Commission's current priorities and the eminent domain process and how it relates to the Commission's process and the acquisition of properties. This was deferred from May 13, 2015. Also on their agenda is Bill 2576, Draft 1, a bill for an ordinance establishing regulations, procedures, zoning development plans, and future growth areas for the South Kauai Planning District, and establishing exceptions, modifications, and additions to Chapter 8 and Chapter 9 of the County Code. And this was also deferred from May 13, 2015. The Committee of the Whole has on their agenda Resolution Number 2015-44, Draft 2, urging Hawaii's congressional delegation to address excessive campaign spending by proposing and passing amendments clarifying that corporations are not people with constitutional rights, in particular electoral rights, and that unlimited campaign spending is not free speech. And this was deferred from June 10, 2015. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, where Kauai's community radio. And stay tuned for Jazz with John. Got a great show for you tonight coming up very shortly. But first, I want to mention that Jazz with John is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Coffee Company, Kamoa Ukulele, and Tiki Aniki.
Kauai Coffee, 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island, at retail locations island-wide on all the Hawaiian Islands, and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments. Built with a one-player-at-a-time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces. Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR. 652-9999 or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
Announcing Saturday and Sunday brunch at Tiki Aniki, 8:30 to 2:30. Lunch, dinner, late night, and now brunch at Tiki Aniki in the Princeville Center. Fine dining in a wild setting. 431-4242.